Welcome to Zephyr Yoga Inspiration. I offer these podcasts for free, and your support really does make a difference and is appreciated. To make a donation, please click the link in the episode description or visit zephyryoga.com. Welcome, welcome to practice. Good morning. The sun is shining. Feels quite uplifting. And a good time to practice the theme that we're going to work with. So as you know, we've been working with the yamas. Now, yamas are these moral and ethical guidelines, restraints, in order to refine our ability to have deep and meaningful relationships with ourselves as well as other people in the world around us. The yamas are the first limb of the eightfold path in the Yoga Sutras called Ashtanga Yoga. Not the brand or the school, but more about actually the principles and concepts of actually how to practice yoga. So the yamas are essential, the first. So we must explore how they actually work with us on and off our mat to start our journey on this path called being a yogi. So we worked with ahimsa, non-violence, don't harm anybody. That's a good little concept. The next one is satya, which is truthfulness. And this is truthfulness not only in our thoughts, our words, and our actions, but that way in which we can start to see how truthfulness can help ahimsa from being a doormat, so standing up for yourself and speaking your truth, but ahimsa keeps truthfulness from being a weapon, not weaponizing the words that you speak to another person. So you can see how they can help each other form better and more intimate relationships with people. Now, the next one is asteya, non-stealing people's possessions, but not only possessions, but time, energy, ideas, rights, and freedoms. So that's a nice little thing in which creates a boundary in the way in which you have a meaningful relationship. The next one is brahmacharya, which literally means walking with God, that when you see someone and you interact with someone, you see the divinity within them, whatever you abide to as a godhead of your understanding, whether it's emptiness, whether it's just the common thread of humanity, if you're an atheist, whatever is that to you, you see their right for autonomy and having healthy boundaries around that. It usually speaks to sexual restraint and not exploiting someone for your own sexual self-gain. So boundaries. The last one, which is this session, is a parigraha. Now, parigraha in Sanskrit points towards non-clinging, non-coveting, non-desiring towards outward possessions. Parigraha means to focus on material gain. So a parigraha is really looking at non-attachment, non-possessiveness, non-coveting, that way in which we practice non-greediness. It's that hankering and yearning to consume and acquire more. So it's like saying, no, renunciate yourself from things. And in that way, we practice non-attachment to not only just material things, objects, but this extends to less tangible ones, kind of like towards respect, attention, love. And we start to see is that when we are trying to control and grab and hoard things, usually what we're trying to do is fill some kind of void, an unmet need, and thinking that exterior objects can actually fill that and make you happy. But we all know that it's only temporary, as you know, you're really upset and you take a cupcake and you eat it. And you're like, for a moment, you feel like, oh, that feels so much better now. And then the guilt and then the sugar crash. And then all of a sudden, it's just a temporary feeling. The same thing is like you go shopping spontaneously and you get that dopamine hit and you're like, oh, that makes me feel better. but then it only has a short shelf life until you either need to get more or you have to address what is at the root cause of you feeling discomfort or dis-ease, discontentment in any pain or and or suffering. So the trouble about, you know, getting things and keeping things is it involves this kind of endless drama of holding on to it and preventing it from changing. Because really, everything that is material in this material experience, even thoughts, emotions, energy, is all subjected to change, all subjected to the concept of impermanence. Everything has a beginning, a middle, an end. And by trying to force a solution over something and saying, trying to control it and saying, no, you have to stay the same and it has to fix me, we just start to realize that unfolds certain amount of suffering, dukkha. So our practice is to really, with the parigraha, is to learn how to let go of that hankering yearning that builds this kind of jealousy. Oh, they have that, and so I want it, and then therefore I will be happy. That kind of greediness over possessions, people, places, and just things. And this is really looking at how we use our practice and to deepen our understanding of impermanence, what is at the root cause of our need to control, possess, or attach to people, places, and things, and learn the art of surrendering, of letting go and letting be. So a parigraha is one of the main lessons in the Bhagavad Gita, and we get a lot of information from this text. And it's a text in which we deepen our understanding of what karma is and how to conduct our lives in the way in which we relate to the battlefield of our own life and the ups and downs of our relationships and how do we make sense of it. So the Gita states that a yogi should give up possessions that hinder the yogic path. Doing so frees the yogi from dependency on these things and allowing the experience of knowing the true self, our true nature, knowing your true who you are, what you have always been and what you will always be, that underlying layer of all creation, consciousness just embodied as you, to know that, to experience that, to really deeply understand that on all levels. That is the kind of point. And they see that by having tons of things, it distracts you from this ultimate seeking to know thyself. So they say, renunciate, like get rid of your things. Don't be attached to things. Allow things to come into your life, stay, and when they're ready to leave, leave. And so there is not this kind of sense of attachment to things. So Krishna has a conversation with Arjuna, and they have this kind of back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And there's one bit that kind of points towards a parigraha. And Krishna states to Arjuna, it says, let your concern be with the action alone. Like, be here now. Don't worry about what happened in the past or in the future or any kind of outcome. Really, just be in the action. And in that way in which you just, the action alone, be present. Be here now, and never with the fruits of your actions. So not being attached to the outcome. Like right now, you might be sitting here with a sense of dis-ease and thinking, okay, after I do my yoga practice, I will feel better. And so, but what if you don't? And so you doing your yoga practice attached to an outcome becomes that parigraha, that kind of, I'm focusing on that gain of a concept that I will feel like this. So let your concern be with the action alone and never with the fruits of your actions. Do not let your results of your actions be your motive, and do not be attached to inaction. So it's really kind of pointing towards the famous quote, it's not the destination, it's the journey. So there is this sense that, you know, I know having certain goals, having certain intentions, and kind of working towards something is important to us. However, really being attached to an outcome, this is what it should look like, this is how it should be, and then I will be happy. But really being present of going, yes, that is a goal and that's motivating me, but I am open to all possibilities and opportunities along this journey. And I really want to just really celebrate the here and now and what is unfolding for me in this time. So it's not the destination, it's the journey. And in that, we start to see actually how we can actually live with the experience that true happiness is within. And by sincerely being moved by the delight, the joy, but also embrace the hardship, the effort, the intensity of life, there is beauty within that. And that everything has a beginning, middle, and end. So just allow that idea of impermanence to sink in. You know, thinking about maybe what you are holding on to in your life right now. You know, is it a relationship that you're trying to force a solution? Is it a family member? Is it your children? Is it your job? Is there a certain kind of outcome to an exam or a project? Or is there holding on to any kind of core false beliefs that keep you stuck in this kind of limited of self that keeps recycling and looping in this kind of habitual destructive behavior? You know, are you attached to real strong opinions about things, beliefs, your judgments, your criticism? You know, and then start to look at, are they permanent? Like, this is set in stone. Or maybe ask yourself, are they serving you? Is it improving the quality of your life? Or could it be time to let them go? And what outcomes really do you know that are going to be fact? So this teaching points us to realize when we do let go and we open a greater viewpoint and allow all possibilities as much as possible to come in, and going, wow, look at how many choices I have. Remembering that karma means action. It's a choice. You have a choice, and every choice has a consequence. And as you listen to that innate wisdom and learn how to utilize these tools as best to your ability, we refine the choices that we make and really are present in the action of making that choice fully, not being motivated by knowing that, okay, if I do this action, that will occur and I will be happy, or I want that. And so it's this more like, okay, going down this road and I hand my will and my life over, do what you will with me. So there is more love in freedom than possessing things. So try to free yourself and kind of open. And that's, you know, this is a part of that practice. So I'm going to give you a real practical example and use my story. And my story may trigger you. It may make you feel sad, but know that I'm okay. And through sadness is a part of life, part of love, you know. And if you don't feel sad, I'd be worried, because it just means that you're not processing a lot of stuff. So do know that I'm okay, and it will be okay. And anyway, sorry, I just claws. All right, so about 10 years ago, my first husband died of cancer. And we have two small kids, and they have grown up now. But at that time, they were 6 and 4. And he passed, and my life contracted in. And I had to learn how to let him go. And there was points where I recontracted and he didn't die the way that I wanted him to die. But he had to die the way he needed to die. And I had to accept. I had to accept certain choices that led into consequences. And then I had to keep practicing awareness, acceptance, and wiser action to learn how to let him go. Finally, letting him go, 6 months later, my beloved Christian, my present husband, comes into my life and lands into my life. I can't tell you. Oh, he's always been in my life, but I saw him for the first time in the eyes of, wow, isn't he the most incredible human? And selfishly, I was like, I love the way loving him makes me feel. Isn't he amazing? What if he dies too? And so I had to learn time and time again to actually allow that, because it is inevitable. It is a part of life, death. I can't control if he's going to die too. Controlling him just contracts me, contracts him, and it creates a lot of discontent, fear, kind of this attachment, this egotism, this craving, I want more, and avoidance of this kind of like, I don't want to face that ugly side of life, and the fear. So another analogy that makes this more practical, probably in all of our lives, if you have an experience, that kind of story in your life. A beautiful butterfly flies and lands in one's hand. The most glorious colors, shape, the movement of the butterfly as it wiggles its wings and antennae. And you're like, wow, enchanted by its beauty. And as you look at it and value, and you're like, oh, this is so moving. It brings me such sincere joy and delight. And I can't wait to share it with other people. And all of a sudden you sense it about to fly off and you grab it. Because you want to show it to other people and you want to savor it even more. And you want to spend more time with it because it was so enchanting. But you crushed its wings. So what this teaching of Parigraha is trying to say is, practice non-possessiveness because it's not yours. Practice non-attachment. Practice this non-coveting. And as you start to learn how to release one's holding, how you can practice detaching with love, we start to live more open-handed, hearted, minded, and the way we allow whatever comes into our lives to really breathe it in, feel it, value it, and allow it to be. But when it needs to fly off, you let it. And so there is that just lesson. There is a beginning of that relationship to whatever lands into your life. There'll be a middle, oh so ripe, and then there'll be an end, and let it go. So it's a practice, because I still have moments of like, I don't want you to die, you know? And I see that, and I have to practice that with my kids. I have to practice that with my career. You know, we have to practice this in all relationships. Nature is a great teacher. You know, even the time of day, the beginning, the middle, and then the end. And then we get to do another day, if you're blessed. But even the seasonal change, how everything is teaching us this art of impermanence, this life cycle. And so through this receiving this moment and giving, we go into this ability to trust, to have greater amount of faith and build this resilience that whatever comes into our lives, we have the tools to really value as much as we can from what is in front of us. Learn more about what it's like to be conscious, embodied, and do this human experience well. Working with our karma, karmic debt, and creating new karma, but maybe healthier karma, healthier choices to create a life in which we can refine and hopefully get this evolutionary upgrade. So the next lifetime, we are working on different stuff and we let go of certain old, you know, karma that is not serving us anymore. But really kind of valuing our lived experience, because this is as good as it gets, you know, this moment, because this moment will change and it might not be the outcome that you were expecting. And so we value the good and bad, 10,000 arrows of sorrow, 10,000 arrows of joy, the indifference in which a yogi just goes, wow, this is living. And can I actually consciously kind of go, yeah, ooh, my body's having some negative thoughts, emotions, sensations. Wow, my body's having joyous thoughts, you know, emotions and sensations. But what is consistent is that knowing, is that consciousness just perceiving, oh, life's ups and downs. And it's right here. And I know this will pass. Everything has a beginning, middle, and end. So how we can actually practice this on our mat and in, you know, our asana practice, is that we try to accept that the body, you know, is capable of doing some amazing things. However, sometimes, all of a sudden, you get injured. So, my beloved husband rugby tackled me and I injured my wrist. So, I can't do weight bearing on this arm like I used to. And I have a certain attachment to my asana, my body, what I can do and what I, you know, and I can't do those poses. Forcing myself to do those poses, I'm going to cause more harm than I'm doing ahimsa, you know, so ahimsa, keep myself safe and be truthful to that, because that is my truth today, and not wasting my time trying to do something I can't. So there is, you know, seeing how practical these yamas are. Or we start to see, you know, that desire of doing the perfect pose as someone else did. We saw it on some Instagram or, you know, magazine and or in a class, and we could start to covet their pose. And we're just going, oh, I want to do that pose, but your body might never be able to do it. And so how do we accept our physical limitations? And or just kind of going, you know, today my body will not move that way. Tomorrow might be different. So respecting how your body is responding, your energy, your mind, your emotions, and be here now, bespoking your practice as you drop into that humility of going, okay, here I am again. I am open. I am willing. I'm accepting the challenge of being present, and I am releasing my attachments to what I could do yesterday. And I am just sitting with that desiring of this pose, this sequence. All right, how can I work with it? And the key is working and focusing with your breath. So when we are stressed out, when we are finding something really intense, when we're finding resistance or this hankering, we have a tendency to hold our breath. Whether it's an anxiety response, whether it's an anger response or an impatience, we hold our breath and we're trying to control something. We're holding on to something. So by regulating the inflow and outflow, we start to see how the breath can create that space for self-reflection, for that self-awareness, and then a deeper understanding going, what was that thought? What was that emotion? What was that sensation? And how can I actually start to calm my reaction in this intense pose? So I'm going to create some opportunities that build intensity of the asana for you to actually see this occur, for you to watch your body naturally react and go, oh my God, I can't do this. Or, oh my God, I'm going to fall over and I'm going to be embarrassed and I don't want to do that, you know, or I can't do that, or I want to look the best. And it's just like, oh wow, that's what's going on. And then you practice a parigraha by focusing on the inhale, opening to this moment, and then releasing into this one. So the beginning of your inhale is like birth. And then right at the end of your inhale, that transition is the celebration of all life. And then the beginning of your exhale is the beginning of decay towards the little death of this moment. And then there's a transition into rebirth. So the breath is like the life cycle, the seasonal cycle, the day cycle. The breath is mirroring that experience of that rajasic birth, the sattvic celebration of life, and the tamasic little death. And then we get to do it all over again because it's really hard to be present. If it was easy to be present in every moment, we would all be enlightened. But our mind gets in the way. Our vrittis, these roaming tendencies, get in the way. And our vasanas, our habits, get in the way. And so what we're doing is just constantly, every moment we wake up, we're practicing. Oh, refreshing this moment. Detaching from what caught our attention and distract us from our present and be here now. So this way in which we focus on the inflow and outflow creates that space and learning how to let go of what is causing us to be distracted and then let it be so we can return back. And when we spot fearful thoughts, insecurities, when we're gripped with self-doubt, we start to see how those narratives and concepts influence our need to cling and control, you know, not only in our practice, but in our lives. You know, we want to control people, places, and things because of our own stuff, that undercurrent of those really horrible emotions that we don't want to feel, that we want to avoid. Our unmet needs, our pain, our grief, our sorrows, and we want to kind of control because there is a fear that we won't be okay. And sometimes we've had life experiences that it's like, it's not going to be okay, but we have to learn how to then, in that scenario, grow around that darkness of our experience so we can let that light in. So yoga gives us tools to self-regulate our thoughts and emotions where we can feel safe, where we feel that beloved, that deep love, self-love, the love from, you know, others, and just being moved by the love, which is our birthright, and that we feel belonging, not only to our body, but our loved ones, our life around us, and that we feel connected to, that we feel that we have this space in and around us, that there is this divinity, this grace. And in that, we can allow ourselves to be as we need, as we trust. And we can allow others to be who they are, not trying to control or fix or, you know, manipulate for own self-gain. And in this process, we need to forgive ourselves for being human. You know, that that we find those loops of negative thoughts, emotions, the memories that come up in practice and in our lives. And the best way is to create a pause. Take a moment. Receive just like, oh, okay, what's going on? And I can see myself doing this kind of very destructive, negative loop. I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not lovable enough. I'm not, you know, And actually, what is trying to seek your attention? What is trying to show up and say, look at me, please see me. I'm really hurting. And how can he actually go, oh, wow, Zeph, this is really hard. What do you need? And so as you ask yourself, you know this because you study with me, I always ask, like, you know, look at your unmet needs. What's going on today? Set an intention. Because those intentions, Like, I need some more courage, strength, and hope. Or I need patience, tolerance, acceptance. Or I need, you know, kindness, love, tenderness, creativity, energy, joy. A word, an intention to go, wow, this is what's going on. This is my intention. And the intention is not setting that end goal that this must happen. But the intention is like a prayer. Form a prayer. Or the texts say, use a mantra. And we're going to use a mantra to help us inspire our practice. And it's going to be the Ganesh mantra. Om Gam Ganapate Namaha. And in this way, it's really asking Ganesh. Ganesh is the archetypal deity of the remover of all obstacles, how he teaches you how to detach with love from your obstruction and free yourself from that ignorance. So he is quite a rotund character, and he has a lot of aponic action. So he's really weighted and grounded. So you're going to embody him in that way in which you feel that aponic action. Apana is that movement of prana that eliminates, that releases that downward, outward, in which you feel supported, stable, and safe. And when we feel that, it's more than likely we're going to be able to have that space to be able to grow, to thrive, to experience, more of what it's trying to teach you. So you can absorb that knowledge and then put it into practice. So we're going to use a mudra, Ganesh mudra, which is hooking your fingers and pulling them apart, rolling your shoulders back and down, and feeling the core muscles integrate. So when you pull your arms and roll your shoulders, you're gonna feel your lats, your anterior serratus feed into the obliques, and you're going to feel that structural integrity, and then that weight creating an asana in which you feel sthira, steady, stable. And then that opens you to that inner space of feeling that sukham, that ease and comfort in which you can refine your breath. And the breath will be key for you to focus on in this practice, because it's teaching you that art of surrendering. And as you breathe and move, with that intention of that prayer, that intention of connecting to Ganesh to remove your attachments, remove your coveting, remove that ability to want to control and possess, that it may free you, that you may live today more open-hearted, handed, minded, and allowing that natural abundance of generosity of spirit to arise as you expand your capacity to stretch yourself into all places and recognize where you can practice a parigraha, where you consciously share your time, your energy, your knowledge, attention, and possessions with others. You know, it's like, here you go, here you go. And it feels good to give and let go. And if you don't believe me, try to hold on to something. But, there's this quote by Adyashanti who says, we must choose between happiness and our attachments. And I always tell my children, I'm like, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And they always respond, I want both, which is fair play. But there is this sense of just kind of going, okay, I know nothing. Let's try this. Okay. And it's just this sense of being more open and freeing yourself from a kind of solid belief that stems from fear. And so we want to open to new possibilities, opportunities, and free ourselves from, you know, that which is causing us that dis-ease, discomfort, that discontentment, that pain, that suffering. A parigraha, detaching with love and opening to the experience of life, of love. The last thing I'm going to say is Buddha was instructing, at the end of your life, Ask yourself three questions as you are facing your own death. How well did you live? How well did you love? And how well did you learn to let go? Because you are facing your ultimate let go. And that is a parigraha. How well did you live your life? Really live without fear and all that kind of sense of just being afraid of life? Did you go out and have so many adventures? And actually, did you brave in loving? Because loving, I'm sorry, hurts. And it should. Like I said in the beginning, when I was warning you about my story, is that the reason why you hurt so deeply is your capacity to love is so great. And noticing how well you can let go, detaching with love from the smallest little things to the bigger things in life. So if you can keep that in mind, you know, this is a part of life. How well are you living right now? How well are you loving to your fullest capacity? I know it's scary. And how well are you really letting go? Practicing for the big let go. So I thank you for listening. I know that was a big preamble, but we're going to crack on with practice. So thank you.
If you would like to continue to practice, find out more information about the topics discussed, or to donate to this podcast, please visit zephyryoga.com or follow the link in the episode description. I thank you.